You are the chair of the Georgia Hospital Association, and this week Georgia Health News reported that the GHA just proposed a plan to Georgia's state leaders for Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act, saying that, you know, that this would really help hospitals and patients. What would the state gain long term by expanding Medicaid, something that the leadership at the Capitol has said really wouldn't pay off in the long run?
Well, long run or short run, it gets into a little bit of a wrestling with trade-offs. Obviously, in the short run, it would give people who don't have an insurance card now an insurance card. And that access to care, under any study I've ever seen, is an improvement to the public health. So that's your short run or your ongoing benefit. The mechanics of its financial sustainability becomes a highly charged political question that people wrestle with, that state governments wrestle with. And a lot of these points are not irrational. If you're in the healthcare delivery space the way we are, with hospitals and physicians trying to provide healthcare, we don't like it when we believe a lot of the population doesn't have access to it. The core issue is we are the last of the dodo birds in the, as an industrialized country, fairly sophisticated, where we don't have a national solution for the uninsured. And we are still trying to figure that out. And our situation is what it is. But I would love to see that gap closed.
Have you gotten any reaction from the governor or any state officials to this idea?
They are wrestling with the issue. I think they very much fear the financial consequences of a misjudgment. But I've not had any direct communications with the governor about this to this point. But it's an ongoing conversation. It's a conversation going on in all 50 states. Even those states that have adopted Medicaid expansion are trying to make sure that they are looking down the road and can manage what they've gotten into.
Because if I understand your proposal correctly, it says, okay, there would be a sunset provision in it once the federal funding phases out for the Medicaid expansion. But if you say, okay, the state can just sunset everything, doesn't that leave you with the problem right back where you started?
It does. I mean, you may have gotten 2 years or whatever of federal money for people to get care. I think that the other question, obviously, is politically, can you sunset it? And that's what many politicians are wrestling with in terms of what's the consequence of an action today in an election 2 years down the road or three. Fortunately, I'm not a politician, so I don't have to trade in that space a whole lot.
Stephen Brill stirred up things when he looked at Obamacare and his new book, A Bitter Pill. And one of the criticisms that he had of it was it didn't do anything to control costs, particularly by drug companies and hospitals.
Right.
What's your response to that?
My personal view, and I think it's halfway objective, but you can salt it as you see fit, is he really oversimplifies some of the things. But I'll agree with a couple of his points. One, the ACA is primarily about access and access through different insurance vehicles, one being Medicaid, the other being in exchanges.
But the president did say it's going to bring down costs. And he talked initially, at least, about some cost control mechanisms for the pharmaceuticals and the hospitals.
Yeah, I think there were some what I'll call modest mechanisms around that. The real cost control, which I've heard people in the administration talk about for many years, is the fact that a more competitive marketplace will drive down costs. And whether or not this is cause and effect, medical inflation has subsided three notches. I think all of American healthcare is looking at value-based or performance-based contracting, where we just announced last year with the largest payer in the state, Blue Cross, a new contract where if we don't perform on costs, if the trend in cost growth doesn't subside, we can face penalties. And I think that's healthy. I think that's good. I think it's fee for service, where you just simply do a service and you get paid a fee, regardless of quality issues or cost issues. I think that's one thing big government and big business agree on. That has no future.
So the model would become what?
I think the model would become more of what I'll call accountability contracting and cash flows, where I'll give you an example. Our Blue Cross arrangement has got multiple quality metrics in it, safety metrics, and also cost metrics that we have to meet, and that our fee for service is at risk. And if we lower costs and everybody saves, we actually have an opportunity to share in some of the savings, but it's got to be a savings.
So if I show up at the hospital, let's say with a, I don't know, heart condition or something, they're measuring how each patient does in terms of outcome, and that figures into
correct
how the insurance company reimburses the
correct
provider?
There are dozens of metrics that we operate off of. Simple example is control of diabetes. And, you know, a broad chronic disease, large population impacted. Are we doing all the basics in terms of evaluating patients with the eye care, the foot care, hemoglobin A1C, all of those items that patients need, and doing it regularly? Again, much of this is enabled by IT, by information systems. Our electronic medical records now can remind our orthopedist that if Mrs. Jones is there for an ACL, but she may be overdue for a mammogram, to remind Mrs. Jones that she may want to get a mammogram. In the old world of disaggregated healthcare in the cottage industry, you never could do that.
Should systems like Emory, big ones, or Beaumont, to which you're going, do what University of Pittsburgh Medical Center has done and just put together its own insurance company?
I think it's always there. I mean, we actually considered it in this market. I don't see a need to do it as long as you can get payer relationships that will enable you to perform reasonably well working with them.
And that'll control costs?
As long as it's competitive and as long as it is got cost targets and other attributes into the mechanism. But again, if you have, in some situations, you have such monopoly players on the payer side that...
The payer side being the insurance company.
Correct. You know, a Blue Cross with 80, 90% market share of the commercial market, then if you're a provider and you want to be, frankly, paid for improving the system and get money to do that, you're almost forced to start your own insurance company. I hope it doesn't have to go that way, but that's definitely what induces some to go down that path.
Do you think that Emory is in a market and in an environment where that might be what happens?
Not at this time.
Could change, I suppose.
Everything can change.
You're going to a system which has really just been put together. All of the parts existed before, but they've been put together. Consolidation may be absolutely necessary for survival, but does it do anything for patient care?
I think it has to if we're doing it the right way. Many industries have consolidated, and for all sorts of economic reasons. But I do believe that in healthcare, you shouldn't approach consolidation unless you can make it better for patients and families.
How do you do that?
Simple example is, you know, hopefully all boats can rise to the highest level. One clear area is in information technology, that the across Emory Healthcare, and they're doing this at Beaumont now, they're putting across a common medical record system that will be electronically available. That means when a patient presents in a physician office, the ER record will be available if they were in the ER the prior day in one of the hospitals, and vice versa. The ER can see what the physician's office may have done 2 days before. That improves patient care, and a lot of that is really enabled by getting more size and scale.
But doesn't the new system raise the issue, which has come up here and in other places, that okay, if one person can get to them, maybe somebody who shouldn't can get to them, or records clearly, could get lost, and you've had that experience.
Clearly an issue that unfortunately, part of the risk of garnering these benefits of the electronic medical record is patient security. And it's, I think the key is for organizations to work diligently and thoughtfully on securing the data, and also being very honest with patients and families if there's an issue. We have a moral obligation to tell them if there's been a breach or even a risk of a breach.
Since the incident here, and I think it was about, was it CDs that were
correct
lost here? What have you done to improve the security and the ability to access information by the people who do need it? What specific steps have you
taken? Well, on the security piece, again, those were 10 CDs from an old system that were just backup. And I will say physically, they were not adequately secured in our view. So we've gone through the entire organization and adopted new and higher standards of physical security. And as importantly, if not more importantly, making sure those are being adhered to. Again, the healthcare is going through a major transition from the paper world to the electronic world. And part of that was visiting a lot of small subsystems, which had varying levels of security. And I'm talking about over a decade and a half. And that's a national situation.
Can we say now that security, not just here, but for hospital patients anywhere, is better than it has been ever, or are we still in the process of figuring it out?
I think it's better than it's ever been. It's the diligence and the effort has to be unrelenting.
John Fox, outgoing CEO and president of Emory Healthcare. Mr. Fox, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity. I really enjoyed it.